Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, a tumbleweed rolls through the ghost town that is Nintendo News. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week. And then on Thursday, we are exploring high school cliques with Nintendo characters. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going great. I feel like we, right now, as Nintendo fans, are experiencing...
You and me.
A repeat of... the end of the year in 2016.
Yes.
Where new hardware, new Nintendo hardware...
was somewhere out there.
We
were five-ing in it.
And I feel... now...
Somewhere out there, right? That's the name of that song from American Tale?
Yeah, okay, I think so. But I feel like we're better prepared... in the sense that we knew hardware was coming.
Yeah.
And the news was kind of drying up.
Yes.
And I feel, like we are, one, in that same space, but two, I feel like having gone through it before, we're in a better position for it.
It didn't kill us.
It didn't kill us.
Made us stronger. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're in a pretty good place, but it does feel like we are in the desert, right? Like, we don't have Nintendo news, really. We've got some, this is our news episode. We're going to talk about the news. We got some stuff to talk about. But yeah, it's like, it's the exciting things aren't like happening in games right now.
Right. And normally this happens around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
It happens like almost every year right before a Nintendo Direct. But it doesn't. But this time feels different.
Well, because there wasn't a Nintendo Direct. I mean, there kind of was.
And there were kind of rumors that there would be one next month or something. But I don't really, I don't know that I buy it. I think it may be a while before
we
hear anything from Nintendo about what's going on. What's the deal?
To quote the prophet Seinfeld, what's the deal with Nintendo? We mentioned tumbleweeds at the top of the episode. Mark, look, this is not the weather report, but it was so windy here on Thursday that a plane I was supposed to fly in was grounded. I had to drive to Arizona. I saw tumbleweeds.
Oh, like
going across the road
from the wind?
Yeah, from the wind.
Oh.
Well, I mean, from what else? How else does the tumbleweed tumble?
I feel like that's one of those, like, what's the sound of one hand clapping type questions.
No, I mean,
I'm not prepared. I'm not prepared to answer
the answer. Is
I
just
feel
the wind.
Like I feel like this is a trick question.
It's spirits
that
or
is supposed
like
to
someone pulling it on a rope.
Prove that I'm not a deep thinker and I refuse to engage.
All right. Fine. Mark, not a deep thinker. If you would like to hear more of Mark's not very deep thoughts, you can go to patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society. And if you are there and supporting us at the 8-bit or 16-bit levels, you can get access to our once-a-month episodes of miniseries that we put out. We are currently making our way through NCS Arcade.
That's right. We are playing games on Nintendo Switch Online and Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that neither of us have ever beaten before. In January, we had a great discussion about The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap. Last month, we talked about Jet Force Gemini, and this month, we're going to be talking about the Game Boy Color game Kirby Tilt and Tumble that has, the first time it's been re-released ever, is on the Nintendo Switch.
And it's a cool little curiosity. We'll be talking about it however briefly in the what we've been playing this week, but suggest everyone at least check it out, because it's a weird one. Also, if you would like to be joining in... Oh, actually, you know, let's throw this in here. If you have any thoughts or any experiences with Kirby Tilt and Tumble, you should email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com so we can read that email on the episode about it. If you want to just like have more casual conversation, you can always join our Discord by emailing us at that same address and talk with people there. But if you want us to bring it up in the episode, really is easiest and best for you to email us. It's just easier for us to source. Also, just want to remind everyone that my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle source book is out there in comic book stores right now. Issue 2 comes out April 3rd, which is fast approaching. So if you have not pre-ordered it already, please do. I believe all 4 have been solicited at this point. They all have release dates and are all coming to comic book stores at some point here, which is very, very exciting. Mark, we've got a couple debugs from last week. Because look, we were talking about our little butts.
Our tiny little butts. Talking about Xbox and games from Xbox Game Studios that should potentially come to Switch. And hey, turns out
some of them
did.
Yes. namely, Hellblade is on Switch. It got a port in 2019. So like,
were we ever so young?
Evidently we were, and we recorded our experiences with Hellblade at that time. On the Discord, Virtual Boy pointed that out and then added, I did some digging and you talked about it at least twice on the February 14th, 2019 Direct Reactions episode and again on April 9th, 2019 Best Buy Leaks episode. Interestingly, Mark asks on both episodes if the game is a walking simulator. I admire the consistency.
I'll never learn.
Thank you, Virtual Boy. Mark, do you think the game is a walking simulator now?
I still don't know.
Sure. And then Buckwheat wanted to, this is... He mentioned that Bioshock Infinite is part of the Bioshock collection. We weren't sure, even though, Mark, you have...
I bought it. I
bought
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I own the Bioshock collection.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about collections of games, maybe during the Master Chief collection, that I would buy instantly to own on my Switch, even though the odds of me playing
it
are low, and because that is exactly what I did with the Bioshock collection.
And hey, that's still like exactly like what you wanted with it, though, right? Is just to have it, just to know that you could at any time play it.
Yep.
I will note that no one challenged or contradicted our like distinction between Xbox Game Studios and like Activision Blizzard King and Bethesda's like sort of separate entities. So, and that's where I felt like we were most out on a limb, just like who knows what we were saying. And everyone seems to tacitly agree with it. So, that's how I'm going. That's my headcanon now.
I thought you were walking around a little more confident this week than last
week.
I
am. Thank you for noticing. All right, Mark, let's get into what we've been playing this week. Kirby Tilt and Tumble, obviously, we're both working on it right now, so that we are prepared and have lots to say about it for our episode of NCS Arcade. Anything you want to preview from that, Mark?
I playing Kirby Tilt and Tumble reminds me how good of a video game avatar Kirby is. Like, in the same way that Mario can do anything, like, I feel like Kirby even more so.
Absolutely. Yes.
Literally, it like fits kind of in every type of game. I think you could.
Yes.
And it's pretty remarkable because I don't know if that was the part of like the conception of Kirby.
Sure.
But
it was part of the conception of Mario, right? That like Mario was designed to be Mr. Video, right? To just be like the plug and play protagonist of any video game. And yeah, it turns out Kirby much better suited for that kind of thing. And I feel like he hasn't really, like, have they really followed through on that in, like, the modern era?
I mean, I guess, you know, you get, like, Dream Buffet.
Right.
That came out last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Where he's rolling around like he is in Tilt and
Tumble. He's rolling around, yeah.
But no, I do feel like in the modern era, Kirby, you know, he'll climb into a robo armor. And he'll do stuff like that, but he doesn't, I mean, I guess really he just doesn't transform into a ball much anymore.
Right. He should, though. He should, I mean, but I guess the Dream Buffet is a great point that I wasn't thinking of, that they are still sort of using him for that kind of stuff, but, like, you can get weirder with that, and we'll hang.
Yeah, totally, because he's, like, It's just a weird pink blob.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at his renders in Tilt and Tumble, and I'm like, Kirby is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, Kirby, what is Kirby?
It is unclear. There's a mini game, a sub game in Tilt and Tumble where you do like a Simon Says style like dance.
That was the first one I chose to do.
Me too!
When it came up. I was like, I'm 100% doing the Kirby.
Do the Kirby! And it's so funny to watch a character that has essentially no features do a dance. But okay, so beyond Tilt and Tumble, which we've already talked about too much, I'm afraid that we've ruined everything. Mark, I continue to play Disney Illusion Island to the point where I have beaten Disney Illusion
Nice.
Island. There is still a lot of collectibles and stuff like that for me to go back in and collect, but I finished the story of it today. Got two credits and everything. These story, especially like going into the last like hour or so of gameplay, weirdly involved, kind of twisty, and compelling and interesting. There's a character that has a monologue about like his own consciousness that goes on a little bit too long. But between the twistiness and that monologue, I was like, is this a riff on Metal Gear Solid? People who've beaten Disney Illusion Island, DM me or something. Was anyone else getting the original Metal Gear Solid vibes from the end of Disney Illusion Island? And if you've beaten the game, I think you know what I mean. But I don't want to give anything away here other than to say it takes some big swings at the end.
Whoa.
And I was surprised and like delighted by them.
How long would you say that it took you?
About 7 hours.
Yeah. I mean, that seems, one, like an amazing length for a platformer like that.
Yep.
And
Platformer, yes, but like I think you have to think of it primarily as like a Metroidvania style game.
Well, and that's where I would still be interested in playing at least part of it in co-op with you.
Absolutely.
And I would be interested after we did that to hear how that changed, you know, like the game.
Yeah.
The experience of the game.
I would also like to try it out I have my completion rate at, you know, having beaten the game is only at like 75% right now. So it would be fun to like jump back in with you and like collect some of those things that I hadn't gotten yet.
Who did you play as? Do you have an option when it's one player? Like, can you choose to be, who did you choose?
I at various points played as everyone.
Oh, okay.
And when I knew I was heading into the end game, I picked Mickey. But otherwise I was just like, I wanted to see, cause everyone has the exact same movesets, and the exact same like, extended moves, you know, that like they learn throughout, but they're all animated differently. Right. So there's like a little, like double jump that they get and like, you know, for, I'm going to forget what they all are, but like, you know, they all have like different methods of doing that. They like get a separate item. Yeah. Well, we'll use the example of, there's like you can hold a button and they do kind of like a slow fall. And for Goofy, he's squeezing a bottle of mustard, like a big bottle of mustard straight down. And that like makes him fall slower. Mickey's got like a little bike that he, like a little gyrocopter thing that he pedals and he falls slower that way. So everyone has, for all of their individual moves like that, a different piece of equipment that does that. It all functions the exact same way.
Oh, that's fun. One, I guess, non-spoilery question about the end game.
And I can't believe I'm being precious about spoilers for the end of Disney Illusion Island, but go ahead.
Is it a like known Disney entity that is the bad guy in like the villain of
no,
the game?
No, the only like known Disney entities are the core quartet of Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy. And the game builds out like a nice little world. But yeah, it is. I could not believe the like twisty, crazy things that they were doing towards the end there.
Fun. That's cool.
And I'm excited to get back into it. I mentioned to you after we stopped recording last week that the thing that the game most makes me think of is Guacamelee. It feels like easy Guacamelee. But I did say that at a time before the game got more challenging. It does get tougher towards the end. And like a lot of the like ways that you get through, because there are no combat challenges in the game, but so a lot of the ways that it like gatekeeps you from accessing harder areas is through platforming challenges. And it just you know, becomes very fun and satisfying to link together a lot of the different ways that they move around to get through tough areas. So yeah, easy guacamole is my touch point for this now. All right, Mark, let's get into, that's what we've been playing this week. Let's get into the new releases and what we might be playing this week.
Today, MLB The Show 24 is out. This is the third year that MLB The Show has been on Switch. It's crazy to think that not that long ago, it was a Sony exclusive game still developed by Sony developers, but now it's multi-platform and it has been for a while.
Yeah, and it is just weird how many of the like big like first party exclusive dominoes just like have slowly like fallen, you know, like obviously with last week's episode about Xbox titles and just MLB The Show 24 being like a reminder, like, oh yeah, a big PlayStation game that sells super well is also like it's in that same category, because MLB was like, no, we need to sell more of these, so put it on Xbox.
One of my favorite memories of MLB The Show was in, must have been like the 2020 Nintendo Direct in 2022, when that old manager puppet showed up.
Oh yeah,
Sarge, was that his name?
Sarge or Coach or something?
Coach, yeah,
Coach makes more sense.
And as somebody who knew nothing about MLB The Show before, like, what a delightful surprise to just like, was this a character that everybody knows about if you know MLB The Show? Or...
Right. Or is it just like someone's personal puppet and they had to like, you know, it was during COVID time, so they had to like put together something and they were like, I got this puppet, and they were like, I don't know, do it.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments.
At some point I bought Sarah a copy of MLB The Show 21, maybe? Or maybe it was 2020. It was like during pandemic time, and it was like a little older one. So it probably was 2020. I think she played one game of it and then was like, this is too confusing. She loves baseball, but the game is so like, you can choose different ways to control every single aspect of the game, and it doesn't really give you any indication of like what is the right way or the main way or like the preferred way to do it. Like, I'm talking like batting, pitching, all these things have different systems that you can choose. And it's just someone with no history with the franchise. It's overwhelming.
Is it like, do you know, is it like, must be like the Madden of baseball?
I think that's basically right. Yeah. Where it's just like, it's been building on itself forever. And every time they change something, they're like, but if you want to play it the old way, you can. So that when you, before you even start this game, they're like, okay, let's talk about how you could possibly control someone pitching a ball. And then you just have to choose between all these options, which I guess is good, but for a neophyte is intimidating.
And then on Friday, March 22nd, Princess Peach Showtime is released.
Woo!
And with that, the pastel pink Joy-Con.
Yes, which I do have my pre-order from GameStop still locked and loaded. I believe it's being shipped to me. I don't think I had to pick it up from a GameStop. Can't think of really the last time I was in a GameStop. When's the last time you were in a GameStop?
Actually, not that long ago, because I can't remember if I talked about this on the show, but I retired my PS4.
Yes.
Gave it a Viking funeral, sent it off to GameStop to...
Right. And you tried to shoot a flaming arrow at it, right?
I
but they
did.
They put it out.
They
with
did.
The fire
they,
extinguisher.
Yeah, I was able to shoot the flaming arrow.
Right.
But they put it out quickly before it was...
I mean, it takes a second for them to realize what's happening, right?
Right.
Like, there's a minute where they're like, hold on.
Right. Especially because I had already turned it in, got, you know, the credit for it.
Right.
So it kind of felt... I understand how they thought it was spiteful of me to do that.
Right. But you were just respecting the platform, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Just sending it off to live in Valhalla forever.
But that was like 2 or 3 months ago. And that was probably... Yeah, it must have, because I used that credit to buy my copy of Mario vs. Donkey Kong.
Oh, okay.
So it was January or February or something.
Yeah, I'm excited for these pink Joy-Cons. I usually play when I'm usually playing with the Pro Controller, but if I'm playing in handheld mode, I like those white OLED Joy-Cons. But I don't know, I think I'll switch it up and I'll go pink for Princess Peach.
I still hold that they missed an opportunity for a special edition here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. A dock that is like pink and has curtains on it or something.
Yep.
It's great. Showtime. Obviously, we've been looking forward to this one for a little bit. Where are you right now on your like levels of excitement for it? I know they'd been like maybe like dampened a little bit. Dampened? Does that make sense? Is that a word? Dampened?
Dampened.
Lessened? Softened?
Yeah, I feel like my my expectations, I would say I have reasonable expectations for this. I have like Kirby game level excitement where I know I'm not the target audience.
Yeah.
I'm just going in looking to have a good time. And from the little bit I played in the demo, I think it's going to be a mixed bag. I think some of the sections are going to be more fun than others. But I am happy that Princess Peach is getting like a game again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be cool if this is the start of her own like set of adventures.
Yeah, I'm also going to be interested to see if there's like a point in the game where it like flips and there is like a more challenging section, or like going back into the levels with like more challenging modes or something. Which like, you know, I don't think like the only criticism that we could have had of it from the demo was that it was too easy, but like that's a big one. I'm just curious if like there is a dark underbelly of this thing,
right? Which would also fit like the Kirby game theme. Sometimes
totally,
those like
yeah.
ramp up to kind of, to some crazy places.
Yeah, is there some sort of eldritch horror at the heart of this that's sending out, you know, the grape and the sour bunch to ruin plays? That really there's a thing out there that wants to feast on your cosmic souls. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
All right. So those are the new releases. Let's close this segment out. Which brings us to a regular segment on our show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, where a performer or a group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance, 433, Mark and I will talk about something not at all Nintendo created, related, thus fulfilling the contract of the piece. Oh boy. Mark, we are talking about road trips today. Because I was supposed to fly to Phoenix this weekend, plane was grounded, had to drive. And so we're talking road trips. Do you have a history of going on road trips, either like as a young adult or like with your family or anything like that?
Yeah, my family, we would probably take like a road trip at least like once a year.
Like to a variable location, or is it like the same sort of?
No, so we would visit family
yeah.
a lot, or when I was like really young, we would like drive to Disneyland like once a year.
Yeah.
And then we moved to California, and then we would go like the opposite direction to
right.
visit family at like Thanksgiving and stuff. And I would, you know, and so, but that probably stopped, you know, when my older siblings started going to college and stuff. You know, so maybe when I was like 10, 12, kind of like early tweens,
yeah,
it stopped becoming like such like a regular thing.
Yeah, we would mostly do road trips up to northern Wisconsin, where my friend Hannah's dad had a cabin. And then also my parents had a little condo right on the border of the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Where we would go on like ski trips up there. And so those are mostly what I think of when I think about like the regular road trips of my childhood, which are all like 6-7 hour kind of things. So like, how do you prep for that? Like what's going to happen to you on that road trip?
Well, when I was younger,
yeah.
back in the like VHS days,
oh.
we had like a little like TV.
Yeah.
Like VHS player combo
yeah.
that my parents would like strap in with bungee cords in the middle console between the driver's side
right.
and the passenger side. But my mom was,
what you watching on those VHS?
Oh my gosh, that like 1999 Lost in Space movie.
Whoa!
Or you know like Wizard of Oz or something
sure.
like that. But my mom was sometimes in the passenger seat. Or whoever was in the passenger seat, really, the speaker on this little TV was on, if you're looking at it, on the right-hand side.
Of course, yes.
So, you know, we had, like, a Suburban, and so in the back you had these, you know, like, little kids being like, you know, turn it up, we
can't
hear
it.
And it's just blasting
right.
the sound of those little metal spiders running around the spaceship.
Sure.
At, like, whoever's in the passenger seat.
Right, the sound of Matt LeBlanc and William Hurt fighting each other.
And Lacey Chabert.
Yeah, there we go. There's another one.
And that big-eyed CGI monkey.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. Who was Dr. Smith? It was Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah. What a weird movie. Can't believe they made a Lost in Space movie in the 90s. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So you would have that, like, communal thing of watching those tapes.
And, you know, we had, like, the travel edition of, like, Sorry or...
Yeah.
Do you remember those, like, the travel editions of
games?
Oh,
absolutely, yeah. We had, like, a travel battleship. It was, like, a magnetic battleship. Do you remember those things that were, like, a cardboard-bound, like... they were, like, on a ring or, like, a little... and it was all, like, trivia... It was like a long strip of something, and like you would move them around, and there was just like questions.
Wait, I feel like they had these in classrooms too.
They were
right?
in classrooms, yeah.
Yes.
But they're excellent road trip fare, for sure. I would say obviously that we played a lot of Game Boy, but we can't talk about Nintendo stuff in here.
Right.
So I stricken from the record. What about snacks?
I don't.
And
really
let's actually bring this up to modern day. If you're in a road trip now, mm-hmm. if you've got to go somewhere long distance. Do you have a go-to snack, a go-to drink?
I'm not a good packer.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm always like, I don't want to think about it. We'll just figure it out.
Right, but don't you, like, stop at, like, a gas station?
I'm not, yeah. I guess,
you
like...
You don't stop? What are you saying?
I guess I'm saying I'm not, nothing comes to mind.
Yeah.
Nothing immediately comes to mind where I'm like, this is what I'm going to get while I'm on a road trip. What about you?
I mean, I would say that there were things that I was like, yes, these are my, like, go-to... like snack foods, but I've done not that I'm excellent at it, but like I've done a pretty thorough job of like cutting out a lot of unnecessary sugar and like don't have like potato chips or you know whatever or soda. So like stopping at a gas station now is like disappointing. Where I'm just like, okay, I'm not gonna eat this. I'm not gonna eat this. I'm not gonna eat this. But I guess we will never know anything further about our road trip adventures. We were accompanied today by an ensemble at the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix, which I visited this weekend while I was there. It was very cool to see. Check out that museum if you find yourself in Phoenix. This is not a paid advertisement for the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix. Mark, let's get into the news.
So E3 is dead and gone.
Gone.
For all that we know. I mean, I feel like we...
We'll get an E3 classic at some point, right?
That'd be amazing.
A retro E3.
It'll be like a retro E3. There will be actors that are hired to, like, play Jim Ryan.
Yeah, that's cool.
And do, like, presentations.
An actor... someone hired to be Reggie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Relive the reveal of Twilight Princess again.
Oh, no. Well, Twilight Princess, fine, just so long as it's not Skyward Sword. Because that's where everything went haywire, right?
Yeah. That was the one where it was like, they couldn't get the motion controls to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a funny performance piece, though, to recreate that demo.
Yeah.
From
that would be cool. We should stage a recreation of our favorite E3 moments and like put that on as like a live show.
Get Ravi, the drum guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
From
Wii
the Wii Music reveal.
Oh, boy. Yeah, honestly, it sounds pretty cool. I think we have to do this.
So we're all waiting for Retro E3 to come back. But until then, Summer Games Fest 2024 has announced their opening showcase for this summer. And it'll be streaming live from the YouTube Theater in Los Angeles at 2 p.m. Pacific time on June 7th.
So what? Okay. June, obviously, we were had been speculating earlier. Would possibly be a fine date for Nintendo to be like, yes, we are putting out a successor to the Switch, and here's what it looks like, and it'll be out next year. But, like, that won't be part of this, right? Even if it happens around this time, it's not going to be in this showcase.
Yeah, I feel like the last couple of years that Summer Games Fest has been around, it has really not showcased a lot of Switch stuff. Occasionally, there'll be like some, I feel like multi-platform stuff, but I can't think of a single like big Switch reveal that has come out of
it. Right, right. Well, and even like Nintendo was for a little bit using the Game Awards, and of course the link between them is Jeff Keighley is the guy who like designs and administers and for some reason hosts all these things. Hey Jeff, hire a host. they have done things at the Game Awards, but not in the last couple of years.
Yeah, not so, really. So, yeah. I feel like the speculation online, anyways, is that Jeff Keighley and Reggie Fils-Aimé,
They were buds.
They were buds or had like a pretty good professional relationship, and so that's why Nintendo was doing some things at the Game Awards for a while, and then Reggie retired. And
yeah, you are right to correct me that they probably weren't buds. They had a decent relationship.
I don't know.
No, but you're right. Like I was being too cavalier about what I think, what I imagine their relationship to be. And you're like, they're not going to movies together. You're right. They have a good working relationship. They recognize each other's email signatures. They're like, oh yeah, this guy.
But yeah, see, it feels like since Reggie has left, that has not been the case. That Nintendo hasn't really done anything there. But
Nintendo also sort of stopped doing like the size announcement that makes sense for the Game Awards showcase. Like reveal a new Smash Brothers DLC character, perfect for Game Awards.
Right, and when they showed the Super Mario Brothers movie trailer. Yes. You know, in 2022. So it's not like Nintendo's been completely absent.
Not even premiering it, but just like, or it was premiering new footage, but it wasn't like the first trailer.
Right. Yeah. I feel like Nintendo maybe uses it as a supplement to their own thing.
Yeah.
But I also kind of feel the same way about the Game Awards, where obviously the Switch has a really big audience, and so it's not that the Switch audience isn't there.
Yeah.
But I feel like it is my feeling is that the Summer Games Fest is targeted way more to the quote unquote like hardcore gamer. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like I feel like that's what they're dialed into.
I think that's right. And which feels a little strange because like that's also where like E3 was kind of pitched to, but like E3 was also the time where like game news would break outside of the gaming bubble. And I just don't know if Summer Game Fest, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter anymore because the game bubble is so big. But yeah, I don't think Summer Games Fest has the same kind of cachet to break out into the mainstream news in the way that E3 did.
Yeah, I feel that way too. And maybe it's because I'm not very keyed in to like Xbox and PlayStation announcements in the same way that I am Nintendo announcements. But I also think that because Summer Games Fest is like a drip feed over months,
right,
that also it makes it harder to track like, is this part of Summer Games Fest? Like,
or is this just something that's happening? Right. Yeah.
I also, to your point, like, does it make sense for Nintendo's new hardware to be revealed here? No.
Right. But if we're talking, if we're doing like any long casting into the future with like newly revealed games in June of 2024, it is possible that we'll be seeing games that will premiere.
Yes.
On the new Switch. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what was so interesting about the Switch era before we even knew it as the Switch. And it was just codename NX because Nintendo, as weird as I think it would be for Nintendo to reveal in full the new hardware in June, you know, before it rolls out at the beginning of next year, if that is what their plan is, they do have a history with like the Nintendo 3DS and the NX of just putting out kind of like a press release. And
yeah,
the idea of the hardware being out there for the NX that turned into the Switch, like the idea of the hardware, even though we didn't know what it was out there forever. Like we knew the Dragon Quest 11 was to show up on NX in some form because they announced, not they meaning Square Enix, like talked about it for NX, you know?
Right.
And so like if Nintendo were to in the next couple of months, you know, put out a press release saying, hey, this baby's coming and it's codenamed this thing, maybe we would at that point in Summer Games Fest see announcements that even had that codename attached to it.
That's a great point, and might be something that even forces Nintendo's hand, right? Because, like, especially if they had originally been targeting sometime this year, a lot of those games, you know, will have to wait to be released on the new hardware, but still have, like, you know, had their goals set a long time ago and are probably, like, targeting a November release or whatever. And therefore, like, in their marketing and publicity departments, have in their contract that we can reveal the game as being on the new Nintendo thing in June. And even though that timeline is all borked now, that they may still have to do it.
Yeah. So yeah, it could be interesting. Yes. I have very low expectations that anything Nintendo will come out of it.
Yeah. But I mean, I also feel like our Nintendo news expectations are sort of just like, until Nintendo gives us a reason to not feel kind of muted about it, we're going to feel muted.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely. Ubisoft.
We go into the YouTube theater in Los Angeles to check this out. Where is the YouTube theater in Los Angeles?
Is that where the Game Awards is? Is it? It must be LA Live. I'm going to guess it's LA Live.
Is it LA Live? Okay, yeah. We're not going. It's 2:00 in the afternoon. Come on.
Ubisoft has revealed the post-launch roadmap for Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown, which is the, like, traditional 2D Metroidvania Prince of Persia game that released earlier this year to critical acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been discussion in our Discord about the game. And I have to say,
and it's on both of our lists of, like, games to check out.
I played the demo. Yeah. It's a fairly robust post-launch roadmap.
Yeah. Well, and we have not mentioned it yet, but the game is currently 40% off on all platforms, including Switch. So it's normally $50. It is currently going for $29.99. So if, you know, we had both said, like, oh, when this baby goes on sale, that's going to be a pickup for me. Have you made any moves towards picking it up, or is the fact that it has been dropped by 40% like 2 months after its release, does that just encourage you to wait even longer?
I do. I mean, that was my strategy for the Sparks of Hope.
Yeah.
And then I ended up never buying it.
Yeah.
And so maybe I'll jump into $30.
Never buying it yet.
Didn't buy it yet, but maybe I'll jump in here at $30.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I am very interested in this game. I do feel like I just played a game sort of like this in Disney Illusion Island, which I understand is going to be a lot less, like, intense in difficulty level than Prince of Persia. Maybe I should get it. But also, Princess Peach is coming out. I don't know.
After I played the demo, I think Patrick would really like this game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so in March 2024, a Warrior's Path DLC, which it will be free. That update is coming. It includes a speedrun mode, a permadeath mode, and new Sargon outfits. Sargon is the hero of the game.
Permadeath mode, that's intense. It's just that you die and then you're done?
And then you're done.
All right.
And then in spring 2024, boss attack update, which will be free.
Free!
Includes a boss rush and some new Sargon outfits.
Although this time the graphic that is representing these things only shows one silhouette of Sargon instead of four in the previous one. So is it just one outfit? There's still an S. It's still plural.
And then in summer, there is the Divine Trials update, which will also be free.
Free!
It includes new combat, platform, and puzzle challenges, and then new items like new amulets, new Sargon outfits.
Always new Sargon
and
outfits.
And more.
And this time, no silhouettes of Sargon. So, I don't know.
Unless maybe you can dress Sargon up as, like,
one of these amulets?
One of these amulets. And then later in 2024, a new story DLC.
Cost you something!
Apparently, because it doesn't have a free badge on it. More details of that coming soon. Gotta say, better post-launch support than Metroid Dread had.
Yes. The Metroid Dread post-launch support bugs me always, especially because there's, like, a rookie mode or, like, an easy mode or whatever it's called that does nothing to address the Emmys being too difficult. That was a roadblock for my brother, who is a big Metroid fan. Couldn't get through Dread because those things stopped him. And if you're not, like, in the mindset to just die a bunch of times, they're a problem.
an update to a game that I'm excited for. Sea of Stars is getting three-player co-op via a mode they're calling Single Player Plus.
This is very funny to me.
Up to three players control the individual characters for traversal and combat, which now includes no new co-op timed hits.
So if you, there's like a little bit of footage. I didn't grab the release date for this. I don't know exactly when this is coming out. But there's a little bit of footage of this in action, and it's just crazy to see all three characters running around the map together. And if you, if one character like runs off where the lead character is, they bubble up just like Mario. There is something very cool and compelling about every player gets to control their own character and therefore has the ability to like master those like timed button presses to do the more complicated attacks.
Yeah, I think so too. I also, I don't know that I'll ever have a chance to really play this.
Yeah, it would be tough.
In co-op, but I enjoyed the game. And I remember always as a kid being like thrilled when there was a co-op RPG.
Totally.
Because
it's
pretty rare.
Yeah. I mean, Final Fantasy VI had that where like you could assign individual characters to the second player. There's nothing to controlling those characters, right? Like you were literally just picking menu options. And then you got to do the blitz inputs if you're controlling Saban. But it makes it so that like you can... normally you'd just be like hanging out with your friend and like talking through the RPG together. But if you both have controllers, you're both a little bit more invested, you know?
Yeah, putting aside MMOs, which, obviously...
Does have multiplayer in them.
But I just feel like for RPGs, it's really rare to see multiplayer.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is a fun idea. And I think Sea of Stars is a good game to include it.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the 3DS game Monster Hunter Stories coming to Switch this summer, so that's the first one, June 14th, which is news in and of itself.
Yep.
Have a release date for that coming in June. Capcom announced that they are releasing a collection that will include both Monster Hunter Stories and Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin.
Which both of these games feel like really under the radar releases, right? Like the... I don't know if the Monster Hunter community is like totally primed for like kind of a cutesy RPG. And I don't know if the cutesy RPG people are totally clued into Monster Hunter. But Capcom's trying to sell some of these things.
And so you can buy the collection. It's a physical collection, but only the first game will be on the game card itself.
Yes.
The second game is included as a download code.
Which, living as we are right now through the Wii U and 3DS eShops, you would still be able to download them now, but like those servers will get shut down at some point. So maybe a little less likely for the Switch because we're sort of anticipating that the next Switch will use the same eShop, and therefore they'll need to keep it alive longer. But who knows?
Right. No guarantees.
No guarantees.
And finally, recently there was an update for Super Mario Run.
Yes.
That introduced in the Toad Rally mode Wonder Flowers?
Or yeah.
Wonder Seeds.
One or the other, yeah.
Which was kind of like out of left field because it was...
Game hadn't been updated in like 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But we got an update for the game yet again.
3.2.0.
But patch notes are sparse on details, but it does include, quote, added features for an event.
An event, Mark. Is this just for the event that's currently happening, the Super Mario Brothers Wonder event? Or we got some kind of Princess Peach Showtime.
Oh, that could be
content
fun.
Here.
That would be fun.
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I feel like... If that is true, that Super Mario Run, it gets content like that, I feel like
it feels like, where you been?
Where you been?
Yeah.
And then, funny if it's more timely than Tetris 99. Because,
yes.
Because I feel like we should also get a Princess Peach Showtime Tetris 99 Maximus Cup.
I bet we don't. I bet we don't get one.
I bet we get one in like 4 months. Because that seems to be the schedule that they operate
on.
Sure.
When Nintendo's like, oh, we don't have a release for August. put out a Tetris Maximus cup for Princess Peach Showtime. All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. Right, like a pretty light week for Nintendo news.
Yep.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, if you would like to join our Discord, all you got to do is email us at nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com, and we will send you an invitation. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ellers saying thank you for listening.